Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Treehouse, episode 45. Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Now, I can see you. Good morning, everyone, by the way. Here we go again with another 2 hours of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity. And I've got to say, there was a querulous look across Lou's face there, Lou Napoleon Pepper, as you had to say the phrase, Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky.
It was fear of getting it wrong.
No, well, yeah, once heard, never forgotten, Lou. As you know, the titles of these shows are just coincidental, just there to cheer things up. And occasionally, I feel the need to say, well, what is Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky? A lot of people will be saying, oh, what do we think we are? Hayseeds? We know Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky. The great, great Preston Sturges, one of the great comedy directors of all time, in Hail the Conquering Hero, I believe. It may be Miracle of Morgan's Creek now I think about it. Anyway, his character has to come up on the spot with a pseudonym. And they said, whatever you do, don't give your real name. And they say, you, what's your name? And for some reason, he panics and goes, Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky. Not John Smith. No, he calls himself Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky. And for a lot of the film, he's stuck with that. His name is Ignatz Ratzky-Watzky. The idea that when Preston Sturges was writing that script, he came up with that must have just tickled him, I hope, as much as it does me. Anyway, here we are again, everyone, and unusually here on show 45. Mm-hmm. Man, we've pumped out over a day and a half of this racket, getting up 2 days of this racket. For very little stipend, but we enjoy meeting here.
Don't let daylight in.
Upon that, but the daylight doesn't affect the magic yet. So look, we've done so many, and the emails have been terrific. Everyone's done their part, but every week there's this groundswell of unused emails that you must think as an audience, well, I ain't right to them again. We never hear of it. But that is not true. Every now and then, about every 10 shows from now, we're going to say, let's not overlook the soldiers, because they're all there. When we do the show, we just plump for the nearest ones. So today, rather than have any new subjects, we're going to just go back into those we have missed over the weeks, and that's what we're going to do. However, Peps, the usual offices remain
open. Yes.
And I didn't get very far into my research when I started sucking the thoughtful tooth and thought, what do I know about him? Because today, as I recall this, anyway, it is the birthday of Ho Chi Minh.
Oh, Ho Chi Minh. Okay.
Uncle Ho, as he was known, which is as good a name for a rapper as I've ever heard. But Ho Chi Minh was born today, variously, between 1890 and 1895.
Oh, it's my granddad again.
Yes, it is. Now, hang on. You're already Louise Napoleon Pepper. You might start to be called Louise Napoleon Chi Minh Pepper, if you want to say that's your lineage, Pepper. Ho Chi Minh may be your grandfather. He changed it like a 1930s actress. He moved it up to 1892. Then to 1894, and then finally to 1895. Oh, Ho! Who would have thought Ho himself would have been so delicate about his age? But I'll race through this if I can. He was raised as a Confucian,
Right.
But I don't know. I couldn't bear to click on the link for Confucius because I'd have never got back. Do you know much about Confucius?
Oh, only that sort of Confucius, he say.
Exactly. And we don't know whether that's, insulting or not.
No, exactly. I don't think it is.
Confucius must have said something, mustn't he? He didn't. He wasn't mute. He said something.
He had plenty to say by the sounds of things.
So Ho Chi Minh was... Well, the only thing we know about Ho Chi Minh is the name modern Ho Chi Minh. He's another one of those.
Well, he was a city.
It became a city.
Right.
But he was born... Stay with this, everyone, because there's plenty here. He was born Giang Sing Kung, right? But in the tradition of Confucius' teachings, his father gave him a new name when he got to be 10.
Asked me when I was 10, I would have probably wanted to be Kim or Debbie.
Kim?
I called my baby Kim, my dolly. By 10, I would, 1988, I would possibly have moved on to sort of a Kylie or something like that.
I Charlene. Suppose so. I bet you couldn't have been Kim, because I bet one of Ho Chi Minh's sisters, or indeed brothers, was called Kim. And it's usually, the way, it's like being John, isn't it? So anyway, he then changed his name to Yen Tak Than at 10.
Ho Chi Minh?
No. Okay. I looked pretty cursorily, it must be said, across these notes to find out, why Ho Chi Minh? But I never got to that. But anyway, at 10, in the Confucius faith... Now, followings, you can change your name. Aaron. I wanted to be called Aaron one time. Aaron. Aaron. That's me. In The Simpsons, they had this discussion. Of course they do, in The Simpsons at one point. And Bart says to the old classmates, they're all having it. And they're all coming up with their names, like Superman. They're all coming up with these incredible ones. And for some reason, Bart just jogs his finger to him, thumb to himself, and says, Steve Bennett. He wants to be called Steve Bennett. Now, that would have been something for the ages. If at the age of 10, Ho Chi Minh had changed his name to Steve Bennett, the American Army could have understood that a little, I think. Anyway, we're getting absolutely nowhere here, of course. So we started... he kind of started travelling the world as a late teenager. Went all over the place, pitched up in Harlem and then Boston, and thought, no, I think England's the place to be. Ho Chi Minh goes to West Ealing, lives in Crouch End for a while in London. Lives in Crouch End. Not only that, he's the pastry chef at the Drayton Court Hotel. I'd look at your face, Peps. This is true. A long time ago, when I did Grandparents' Brushes with Fame, and we'll open that again. Who did your parents or grandparents meet? Not you, just coincidentally. And a caller rang in and said, my grandparents were served a dinner on the cross-channel ferry by Ho Chi Minh. Now, that's a huge one. It wasn't quite as good as Emperor Hirohito came into their ballroom dancing classes with his top hat on over in the Balls Pond Road. But, so he was the pastry chef at the Drayton Court Hotel, and I then found, yes, he did. He worked on the New Haven to Dieppe ferry as the pastry chef. Ho Chi Minh, madam. Ho Chi Minh. But how would you remember it was Ho Chi Minh? I don't want to talk about...
Well, it depends what name he was going by at this point. Your nan's never going to say, I met whatever these...
But you wouldn't... How would you remember the pastry chef on the grandparents? The thing is, they found the information. I mean, would you say, this pastry was particularly good. Who was the chef? I'll check, sir. Comes back. I find it was created by the future revolutionary leader of Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh, sir. One day, Saigon will be named after him. Oh, thank you. Tell him I've had cream horns all over the world, and that was absolutely superlative. Why would you know Ho Chi Minh was your pastry chef on a ferry?
I'm amazed a ferry has a pastry chef, to be fair.
Those were the days.
The glory days, I guess.
Those were the days. That was port out, starboard home, of course. Anyway, Ho Chi Minh himself, going under whatever name, steaming under whatever name he chose, was the pastry chef, not only on the ferry, he was at the Drayton Court Hotel. The only other thing we need to know about Ho Chi Minh, because the rest of his life after that tails off, like so many for me. No, it is once he gets into the revolutionary racket and the Vietnam War, you're still thinking, pastry chef at the Drayton Court Hotel, eh?
Maybe that's where it all began.
I know.
This rebellious streak.
A couple of Americans came in, didn't tip him. Bang, there, and that changes the world, my friends. So his hobbies were reading, gardening, and feeding his fish, many who are still alive. How about that? Min went in 69. Oh, he went. He was a polyglot and spoke most languages in the world and was absolutely fluent in Esperanto.
Ah.
Now, what do you know of Esperanto, perhaps? What do you know of Esperanto?
Made up, wasn't it? Meant to be the universal language?
It was supposed to be everyone's second language.
Right, okay.
I've
got a lot of time for. I think that'd be quite handy.
Yeah, exactly. Because the idea that the pressure's on to speak various languages, well, if everyone had a universal second language, there's your default. It makes absolute sense, but it never caught on. It was invented. We're going to start the show any second. It was invented by a Polish optician, L.L. Zamenhof, who wrote under a pseudonym and created under his pseudonym, and his pseudonym was Doctoro Esperanto.
Ah!
Doctoro.
Anyway, the first word I shall create in my new language is Doctoro.
And like all made-up languages, he sticks an O on the end of it. Yeah, that's foreign-sounding enough. So we're going to get back to Min and then start the show. But here are some Esperanto things I looked up.
Ooh, okay.
I don't just, sit around whistling Dixie before we come on the air, get all this going on. Here we go. Hello is saluton. Kind of makes
sense. I can see where he came up with that one. Yeah.
Yes is yes with a J. Because they don't have a Q, W, X, or Y, but they have various letters.
Helpful.
Twice.
Okay.
With those little snakes over them, like the Spanish. Good morning. Bona matenon. But this sounds just like any amount of languages.
It is literally just squeezing together a bit of this and a bit of that.
I love you. Mi amas vin.
One like wine, isn't it?
One beer, please, is uno birro mi petas. Now, it does. If I told you this was Portuguese, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's your Esperanto, which is a little bit of it. See if you've learned anything in this Esperanto lesson.
Okay.
Play along at home. I'm going to give you the Esperanto. What do you think? What do you think it says?
Oh, this is good.
Tio estes hundo. Tio estes hundo. What do you think?
He is handsome.
No, that's a little too on the nose there. Think of that last word.
Or he is a dog.
That is a dog. That's the phrase. Tio estes hundo. Forgive the female psychology there. He is a dog. It is a dog. Yeah, how about that? It is a dog. So, okay. Or that is a dog. So there's your Esperanto. And now we'll leap straight back to the dying days of Ho Chi Minh, dreaming of the good old days when he would layer the pastry and the phyllo. But here was embalmed in Badin Square. Now, I've never seen an embalmed body. Would you go and see one?
No. Who else is embalmed? Isn't Lenin embalmed?
Lenin is, yeah. Lenin's embalmed. Million laughs when you go there. Les Dawson used to say, when he first started as a comedian, he said, I got a review that said my act had all the humour and warmth of a suicide attempt in Lenin's tomb. I think I would. Mao was...
Not sure I'd queue. If I was passing and they said it was open... I'd maybe stroll in. I don't think I'd queue.
Sometimes it's just the head and the hands. Who's that fellow? Is it Bentley? Sits in the beginning, the entrance to a museum in London, doesn't he? And he sits there looking like the Quaker Oats man. And he's in a case. And I've looked at photos of that. But if they told me he was made out of wax, then I'd believe that too. But I think there's something to be said for it.
This is like the jewellery made out of teeth. It's not something I've had to ponder yet.
No. Vivian Stansel said, as Sir Henry at Rawlinson End, when I go, don't want a funeral. embalm me, stick me in the hall, put a flex up my backside, and use me as a lamp. Now, I think there's something in that as well, but we're getting nowhere here talking about embalming pastry chefs this morning, perhaps. What are we doing? What's the actual show going to be?
Well, we are actually clearing the decks.
Clearing
we're
the
not,
decks, everyone.
We're not doing no topics.
No,
we're
we just, ain't doing no topics. So
it's a free-for-all.
We have got so much stuff around us, and you're saying, yeah, well, thanks a lot. We're not going to get through that again, are we? But give us the first one you've got from the backlog. No matter how far back it goes, all our subjects remain open. Where you go, Pips?
Well, actually, the top of this, it says Treehouse 33. So that tells you. That places it.
12 weeks ago? No.
This is from Pete. Mm-hmm. Decades ago, his subject is apropos of nothing. So he hasn't even gone for one of the topics.
Good for him.
Some decades ago, I used to waste my time earning a crust in the court service. Picture the scene, a fusty courtroom round the corner from Soho, with the waiting room and courtroom separated by a double-doored antechamber, with each door with a face-sized porthole window. One particularly dull afternoon, the case which centred around conflicting expert witnesses' reports, the sitting magistrate decided to retire to consider a point of the law and announced they would need a minimum of 45 minutes and that the courtroom should be cleared. It crossed my mind, it was no doubt entirely unconnected, that those 45 minutes would tally with the amount of play left until tea in that day's test match at Lord's. Having politely ushered the remaining barristers and solicitors out of the room and locked the innermost doors, it fell upon the usher and I to prepare the room for their return. This we did by the medium of off-ground touch, recruiting a few players from the office down the corridor. A good time was had by all. So good a time, in fact, that none of us noticed the chief clerk of court standing peering through the porthole with the kind of disapproval I haven't seen this side of a school report. The chief clerk duly hauled me over the court coals and issued me with a written warning for misconduct and that any similar behaviour would see my tenure within the courts terminated forthwith. I considered telling him if he thought off-ground touch was inappropriate, he should have been there the other week when Tommy and I had put on a Star Wars puppet show for a court usher.
No.
Using glove puppets.
No, really? This off-ground touch.
Game of my child.
Explain for anyone out there who's not, you know, missing the sporting world as much as we. How would you describe off-ground touch?
Off-ground touch was it, or had, or tig, or it, tag, or any of those. But you couldn't be caught if you were off-ground at the moment of being...
You literally, like one of those goats, like the old mountain goat herself, you hang on to the light fittings and onto the skirting board. You sit on that,
I remember we came up with like a 10-second rule, because otherwise some people would climb on the benches in the playground and just sit there for the whole game. So then you used to stand over them going, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five. And then as soon as they put their foot down, I got you.
You're counting Mississippi way too fast there. I would have stopped you. You can't just speak. It up. It has a point. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, or whatever. And we'll get into rhymes and reasons one day of childhood games. This requires some of our more thoughtful, not to say spooky music. Here we go. Now, again, I haven't got a name on this. I'm so sorry. It's either I've cut it off or it never made it through. Here we go. This is about what have you stolen? We did quite a few weeks ago. What are you admitting you once stole? This says, an item I stole has literally haunted me for over 20 years. I went on a trip to Egypt in my 20s. One day we went to, of course, visit the Pharaoh's tombs in the Valley of the Kings. Now, I've been in a job for 2 years where the whole department travelled the world with an ongoing challenge to bring back unusual souvenirs. I once hauled a yellow brick back from Kansas. You get the idea. I'm now in a Pharaoh's tomb and there's stones on the ground. So I think, well, that's cool. I could have a stone from a proper Pharaoh's tomb. Into the pocket of my shorts it went, and after pretending to tie my shoelaces, back it came to the UK. Then, when we were back, it was pointed out to me that this small round mound of rubble I'd brought back might be cursed. Cursed? Well, where did you take it from? My initial thought was, well, that's nonsense, but on reflection, I wasn't so sure. But how do you get rid of it? I've seen too many horror films where a little child on a tricycle sees the stone, picks it up, and the whole world catches fire. So the stone ended up in a ring box, and I put this ring box in a drawer. I've now moved house about 5 times because I don't dare throw the damn thing away. Every time I've moved, I've come across it, sighed, and put it back in the box. I need to get it home to Egypt. That's the thing. And one day I will. I need to find a cure. I need to get shot of the thing. I need to break this curse. Now, that's it. I mean,
if you're accursed.
The thing is with that, you think, come on. But really, you took something from a pharaoh's tomb? I mean, who was it who did the original dig? Lord Carnarvon. It was a Tutankhamun one anyway. They said there's a curse over everyone who went into that, and it's absolutely true, because Carnarvon opened that tomb, I think, in 26, and over the next 50 years, all his teeth fell out. Now, I don't believe in the fourth dimension, but that you can look up. Lord Carnarvon's teeth fell out until the last one went when he was 89. So if there is their friend there, watch how you brush, my friend. First one goes, you better get on the first plane to Cairo. By the way, and I like these shows, but we just do this. Cairo. Peps, have I told you this? The original name of Cairo, do you know what Cairo's first name was? Maybe I've got this the wrong way around. No, I don't think I have. No, I have. I've got it the wrong way around. anyway, the point is, and you can look this up, I can't do all the legwork on these shows. Cairo was called Nashville.
I'll come off it.
Or Nashville was called Cairo. One of the two. I think Cairo was called Nashville.
Let's just say it was and leave it at that.
Well, you know, I've told you before, you know it's going to change soon. It is without doubt the most polluted place I've ever been.
I think you have said this, yes.
Yeah, and they're changing the name, I think it's to November the 13th, because that is the bit. No, I know. People who have never heard the show before, I think, they just take drugs and talk. But it's true, they're going to change October the 13th, I think, because that is the date of the founding of the modern state of Egypt. And
they should call it Ho Chi Minh.
That whatever we got there, that's taken. Now, believe me, they did. They looked up, there's a little copyright, a little registered sign next to that. So they've gone for October the 13th. And so we live in a world, and forgive me how many times I say this, where one day people will be able to say, what is the capital of Egypt? And the answer is October the 13th. Because they're actually building a new capital of Egypt. But anyway, that fella needs to get over to Cairo and get his karma sorted. What have you got there?
This one isn't that old, but it's Harry the Roofer. It's about made-up ghouls and that, as Harry puts it.
So okay, made-up monsters your parents and illnesses your parents scared you with.
In the 60s, my parents hankered after a Yorkstone fireplace across the whole wall with useful niches. The old man brought home a truck with lots of broken stone on it. However, on closer examination, a lot of it appeared to be old gravestones. Oh. On one piece, there was the name Kenneth Spratley. But it was not seen once turned on its side and built into our tasteful embellishment. Me and my little brother, I was about 6 and him 2-ish, didn't like the fact the stone was thus engraved. And every time there was a creak or a knocking in the house, my old man would put on a Fife Robinson accent and inquire, is that you, Mr. Spratley? Or come in, Mr. Spratley.
Oh, looks like I was laughing at a long dead soul.
It really put the wind up us.
I'll bet.
Also, he was a very vain man, and around the same time, we were living between Chislehurst and Eltham, and he bought himself a Dr. Zhivago forage capped hat. He used to gape at his reflection in the mirror, and my mum would watch him and say, look at him. Who does he think he is? The Sharif of Mottingham?
Oh, very good. Very good. And two things come out of that. One is these shows, even though they were just opening a portal into another dimension, because I can connect that with Nashville that some people call fire because of the late Glen Campbell. Who sang Rhinestone Cowboy. Stay with this. And I promise you, I'm not just shoehorning. I don't need to. We've got plenty to do. I'm not just shoehorning this. One of my sister-in-laws once, who, like a lot of women, don't bother with lyrics, and I don't mean that in a disdainful way. Sometimes I'll say, same as my dad did. What's it matter, you know, the tune? The words don't matter. He always used to say, they don't. Just sit around thinking, oh, what's the next word? You never sing the song, would you? But the most extreme example of that, she was attending to some washing up in the kitchen, and the song Glen Campbell's Rhinestone Cowboy was on, but she sang like a Yorkstone fireplace. She did. She said, and I'm not just said she's. So when you said Yorkstone fireplace, why I.
Now we all will.
Now we like a Yorkstone fireplace. And again, I said, what'd you say? Oh, what don't matter. I'm just singing along to it. A Yorkstone fireplace. The other thing is gravestones and that. Mm-hmm. A church near me down in Greenwich here in London. It's just, you know, it was getting pretty decrepit. But they have now updated or certainly modernised their graveyard, which is, goes onto the road. St. Alphage is down here. And they've moved all the tombstones to around the edge, you know, some of them two or three deep. I wouldn't do that if I was a workman. Did you hear a scream then? I heard a scream. I really did. I heard a scream then.
From the soul at St. Alphage's.
But I wouldn't do that if I turned up and the foreman said, what did they get all them, knock them all down and put them all around? I wouldn't.
Whoa.
No, have they never seen Poltergeist? But I couldn't do that. Now, again, whatever subject this raises with you, dear listener, if you want to say, well, yeah, you've got experiences of the graveyards and that, but they've moved all of the tombstones around the edge like they don't matter. I know. Saying quick, Peps, and then we'll...
Yeah, I'll do quick, and then we've got to do our break. Jen in Preston, notable names. My mum went to school in the 60s or 70s with a Henry Westerbeek. Not that unusual, but she was in the same class as Henry's brother, who was Cornelius. Yes, as you would say, Mr. and Mrs. Westerbeek, given of a son, named him Cornelius. Cornelius Westerbeek!
Wow, well, of course, Chevy Chase's real name is Cornelius Crane Chase. My dear friend Cornelius Fisett, who I used to work with. So we're going into the break, but might as well get this another one done. Simon got in touch, apropos of nothing. Knock myself out of the subjects, and everyone starts to have things like that. Apropos of nothing, I just discovered there are no trains in Libya. In Libya, there are no train lines at all. Now I am staring off into the middle distance. And so shall we, Simon, as we listen to these important messages.
Hello, I'm Jay Rayner, and I host the Out to Lunch podcast, where I take fabulous guests out for lunch and grill them to a turn. For now, whilst lockdown reigns supreme, we're staying in for lunch instead, and we've got great company. Fascinating people share only the best takeaways with me over webcam. Great food and insightful conversation with the likes of Gary Neville, Sharon Horgan, George Ezra, and Dieter Von Teese.
Have you ever had a cream pie in the face?
No! So if you, like me, enjoy food and are missing restaurants, subscribe to Out to Lunch with Jay Rayner, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
And we're back again. Thank you very much indeed, Wisby, amongst others there. We are doing a sort of... this is not one of those end of series things that they do in America, where they just do all clips from past shows. And, you know, they even did that on Happy Days, didn't they? Used to do that on Happy Days, Peps. Yeah, what was the name of that guy who came to visit us that time? Oh, I remember. You mean the one... cop out at the end of the series when they used to do a compilation. No, this is all new material that we've not got round to in the last few weeks. We're just working our way through the some of these emails. I think, did I read that at the time, or have I here's one. Stop me if it is, Peps, and that's okay. Fine. This is from our subject we did. It happened to me while swimming. This was from Adam. I regularly swim at my local pool, and often on a Sunday I use the mixed juice session, or a free-for-all as it's known. I was going up and down doing lengths when I saw this kid being given a diving stick to throw into the pool. You know those things, highly coloured rubber truncheony sort of things. Given I was about 15 metres away from him, I didn't feel too concerned and kept on with my lap. The young lad then proceeded to whang this thing straight into the pool, hitting me on the top of the head and putting me under for a moment. I managed to finish my length, to no interest from the lifeguard or his parents, but then I had to get out. The stick had ended up giving me a concussion. I was off work for a couple of days. The only good thing was it hurt less than the time I swam headfirst into a wall while doing the backstroke.
Oh.
Now, this is from Adam. that's all. Yeah,
always my fear in a pool of...
The backstroke is an unnecessary stroke. People who do it ostentatiously. We know that. Nobody does the butterfly.
As I see also butterfly.
See also butterfly. But I do like the kid, because I've been in the pool when they throw those things in. They're like the chew toys you give to a dog. And to throw it in with force, to hit him, thus sending him under, like sending him under like a submarine. Oh, down he goes, a depth charge has hit him. And he came up choking with bubbles, and he was off work for 2 days with concussions. 2 days with concussion. Now, I was talking last night to Jar Wobble.
As one does.
I know. Well, yeah, I've known him so long, 40-odd years. I still call him that, even though his name's John. But anyway, so John Wardle. So, and we were talking about swimming baths last night on Twitter. This on the record, if you remember to see it. And we were talking about, because there's this new sport where I didn't even saw it, Peps. I retweeted it.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, one of the ESPN put it on. There's the sport, and how much do you want to do this? Where at last, the top ball has been reclaimed from all these professional athletes and poseurs. And the idea is just to launch yourself off the top ball as flamboyantly as possible with no attempt at a dive. This is clip, and it's proper commentary on it, and people just throw any shape they can and keep moving until they hit the water.
Oh, I'm up for that.
Very thing they tell you in swimming baths not to do.
Yeah, no horsing around.
No, and women and men just throwing themselves, great big fat fellas just hitting the water, and it's a sport. And I started talking to John about that, and we went into the various... What was your local swimming bath, Peps?
I would have said it was Hornchurch, Harrow Lodge Park.
Modern or ancient?
It was relatively modernised by the time I was used. It did still have a diving board,
but we had
that I never went on.
In socialist Britain, I had three within walking distance. The Lorry Grove baths.
I had to get a bus to Harrow
Lodge. These were Victorian and very, very... They were ropey even then. They were just pure concrete and marble, I suppose, but freezing. The South Park open air baths, which were absolutely perishing freezing, but a beautiful old Lido, a word we never used at the time, and Rotherhithe indoor baths, which were beautiful. But Rotherhithe indoor bath, because it was modern, I'm sorry if anyone's eating a nourishing Ho Chi Minh style pastry right now. When you came out the men's and women's changing rooms, when there were such things, when you came out of the men's and women's changing room, there was a foot bath. Before you actually got to the pool.
Oh, soup.
Never was there a more revolting water than the foot bath water everyone was required to walk through. And, you know, no wonder you can't get older Veruca plasters these days, because they're all in there. The most revolting spectacle. But your feet came out of there and into the pool. So much worse. Now, I'm sorry to talk about that. I don't know what it was like on the women's side. I don't know.
Just as bad.
Some bloke just off a shift or a load of school kids. Dripping in their own gravy. But all right, we've been through the foot bath. anyway, this is getting us absolutely nowhere. What have you got there, Pep?
This is from Sean. What have you stolen? Yes, you. Please take this as my confession. I'm not proud of what I've done, and perhaps this will absolve me. 12 years ago, me and my wife went to London for a weekend break and stayed at a plush hotel. When we arrived, the reception and foyer were unnaturally busy, lots of official types running hither and thither, and we assumed there was a wedding or conference and some such. We went out for a meal in London and in London town. And after that, we walked back to the town and partook of a drink in every bar we passed.
Oh, man.
By the time we were back in the foyer, we were a little sozzled, to say the least. We fell into the lift and pressed any floor number and laughed about our evening as the lift took us up. The elevator slowed to a halt, the doors opened, and a burly gentleman in a black tie said, "You here for the party?" I raised an eyebrow at the wife. She smiled, and I said, yes. "Down there, sir, on the right-hand side," he said. We followed him and wandered down the carpeted hall until we saw a poster 6 foot high. BAFTA Award Winners Party 2008.
Oh, let's make think about that. I may have been there. I may have been there.
Here we were outside the post-event celebration. Neither of us BAFTA winners, but we'd come this far. And full of merriment and drink-fueled confidence, we entered. It was actually quite sparse and dark, and we'd obviously missed the massive throngs of guests. Now, in the early hours, only about 12 partygoers left dancing. Disappointed not to see anyone famous, we were about to turn and leave when we saw, unguarded, a BAFTA. As the disco ball spun on the ceiling, the BAFTA illuminated and beckoned me towards it. Well, I'll never get the chance to hold one of these again, I thought. I left my wife standing alone, grasped the BAFTA, and realised they're actually very heavy. I held it aloft in faux celebration, pretending to be taking a crowd's applause. My wife. As I looked at my wife, I was met with wide, glaring eyes and dramatic hand gestures. I looked around in a panic, but no one was looking at me. Now, please remember, I'm a God-fearing man who went to church every Easter and Christmas, had never done anything naughty.
Oh, yeah.
But I paced briskly towards my wife, grabbed her by the hand, dragged her out of the room, and everything after that is somewhat of a drunken blur. I must have made it back to the hotel room, and I have over 100 selfies of me and the BAFTA in various poses. But the following morning, I had pangs of regret. Someone must have worked terribly hard in their industry to achieve this award.
Not
and on their night of celebration, on their night of celebration, I had stolen it. I was going to take it to reception and say I'd found it, but thought, what if they checked the security cam and saw it was me who'd stolen it and called the police? Surely the winner would explain to BAFTA then that their award had been stolen and they would be given a spare one. So I put the BAFTA in my suitcase.
Wow.
And checked out.
Wow.
The BAFTA is still on our sideboard. I hide it when my mum comes round, as she would never forgive me for theft. So to the person who I deprived, I cannot apologise enough. However, I cannot worry about being arrested by the police as I emigrated to Egypt.
Oh, look at this. No. How cyclical is this show? How tremendous. So what is tit for tat? We've got a bit of the Tutankhamun's tomb. He's got the best sound editing of 2008. That seems to me yin and the yang. I've got an MTV award here, never knowingly ever been on MTV from TFI Friday. Whoever was hosting it that year, the host of the MTV Awards, was on TFI Friday, and she came in with this award, and she put it on the desk, and there is one, and everyone went ooh. But at the end of it, you know, got an advert quick, she got up and went, and she left her award there. So I've got it. It wasn't her award, she was just that's heavy. It's the planet with the spring off it. And MTV, that's a heavy award one way or the other. But
I thought these awards all had the people's names on them. So I didn't
know. You're thinking of the FA Cup. that's ribbons, isn't it? But anyway, I don't think they do initially. Actually, they do. And I'm going to have to say this. All my Sony awards, yes, they do. And I remind you that Sony retired the category DJ of the year I won it, probably because of that. So I am in perpetuity.
The reigning.
The DJ of the year. And as Elvis Costello said, all this useless beauty. This is from Carolyn. Carolyn's in touch for the subject, have you ever been shushed or shushed anyone? Ooh. By the way, Peps, I think we should do this every Tuesday.
Yes.
I think we should just, coming up with a new show all the time. Let's just coast along on the goodwill of the listeners. This is, were you ever shushed or shushed anyone? Now, again, like many of the correspondents we've had today, your sympathy is not entirely with the correspondent.
Okay.
You've asked, where were you shushed? This has happened to me twice in similar circumstances. As a change to our normal plans, a group of six of us decided, rather than just go to the pub meal somewhere, we'd all go out and do a bit different. We hit upon going to the bingo for a laugh. All excited, off we went. We joined up, got loyalty cards, purchased dobbers, and got a table. I can tell you, Friday early evening, there are quite a few serious players in Worthing with their eyes seriously down. Just by entering the venue, we also brought the age limit down by a few decades. Beer was cheap and wine was better value by the bottle. And to be honest, after a bit, we couldn't keep up with the lines and numbers things. We just started talking amongst ourselves. As more games went by, various evil stares from the locals daggered our way until we were told by the caller himself over the tannoy, The table over there. Could you just shush, please? Could you just shush? We were horrified. We looked around, and of course, several of the other old girls. Shh. We were well and truly shushed. My previous shushing incident was in Nottingham Bingo with a hockey team on a night out. It was summer, so training and matches were off. Again, the cheap wine, and this time, not only were we remonstrated with from the tannoy, we were removed from the hall. Caroline. Now, Caroline, I've got to say...
Did you learn nothing?
No. Both times, went to Bingo and chatted through it. Imagine being in the pictures in front of Caroline.
Oh.
Imagine being... Yes. But thank you very much indeed for that. But our sympathies, I'm afraid, remain with the octogenarians on the Sussex coast. Something from you, Peps?
This is from Clive in West Wickham. What have you been chased by? A few years back, my wife and I spent a lovely 10 days on Antigua. Check in. There was a restaurant a short walk along the beach from our hotel, and one evening we ate there. A lovely beachcomber type of place with a coconut palm leaf roof, barrels on the sand, etc. We sat down and ordered foods and drinks. So far, so idyllic. My then girlfriend and now wife Anne nipped to the loo, and as I sat there taking in the sunset, from the corner of my eye, I noticed something drop from the coconut leaf roof onto the sand. Thinking nothing of it, I looked back at the sea and then noticed more movement from the corner of my eye. I turned and saw the hugest spider I had ever seen running up the sides of the empty barrel next to ours. 5 or 6 centimetres across, pale sandy colour, lithe and hairy. It suddenly stopped running, seemed to stare at me before leaping towards me, waving its arms and legs like a facehugger in Alien. Anne came back from the loo, finding me screaming my head off, trying to hit the spider with my flip-flop as a table of locals were killing themselves with laughter. The creature disappeared as suddenly it has appeared, and we sat down. I didn't really enjoy my meal, as to every other diner's amusement. Every time the evening breeze moved the hairs on my leg, I jumped up thinking the spider was back to finish the job. While we were waiting for the bill, the thing appeared again, the front leg slowly clawing over the top of our barrel, and took another flying leap at me. It had a personal grudge. It missed, landed on the sand, and scuttled away. When we got back to our hotel, I said to the staff, "What are the horrible, aggressive, sand-coloured spiders?" No one said they'd ever seen one. "We only have tarantulas here, and they're big and black and move slowly," was the response. I asked all locals over the next few days and have Googled it with no success.
Wow. So a new breed of aggressive spider, apart from these killer hornets that we're all waiting for.
Just a tarantula with sand on it.
I hate to gender these things, but that is the absolute decisive and forensic female mind. Blokes would sit there going, "I wonder what it was. We'll have to look at it."
You know, it's sand eyes
colours. And then the woman looks over and goes, "Well, it's probably just a trench of sand on it." Yeah, it might have been.
Exactly, I mean, a tarantula is still...
You're absolutely right. He said it fell into the sand, and then, because he watches Doctor Who, it came up on the table. But by the way, what is 5 or 6 centimetres? Is that like 2 feet?
2 inches, it's not happening.
Oh, is it? Oh, well...
You heard me pause as I went, oh.
Well, this is from Una, and this is a subject that rolls on and on, I'm happy to say so, and he's getting lines at school. And this is beautiful. My son was given lines to write at school on a Saturday morning. Detention. I didn't know you did detention on a Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Some schools. It'd be really bad to get a Saturday morning one.
Well, she says my son was... I said, "You have to be, because that means the teacher's got to come in. Don't give Saturday morning detention. What are they doing?" They'll go out on Friday nights and get hammered. My son was given lines to write during a Saturday morning detention at school. I found them in his blazer pocket and have kept them to be produced on his wedding day or some such auspicious occasion. Well done, Una. What he was given, he had to write 200 times, "These are the best days of my life."
Oh, well done, teacher.
Oh, teacher. I want you to write out 200 times, "These are the best days of my life." And imagine, by the time you've got the number 73 line, you'd be thinking, say if they are. Say if they are. Say if this is it. From there on, it's all downhill. Thank you very much indeed, Una. I'll just give you another quick one while I'm here. It's an update. Oh, actually, I'll do the one from Keithy Baby, Baby Keithy.
Baby Keithy.
If this was the other week when we said, don't talk to me about fruit. Now, I know fruit. Keith works on a fruit and nut stall.
Ah.
And he says, I work on a market stall selling whole foods, seeds, nuts, spices, snacks, dried fruit and the like. Our dried mango pieces are extremely popular. One day I was opening a packet to give out as samples when a sharp edge gave me what looked like a paper cut just below my knuckles. Ooh, suck that, I said, and just carried on. After about an hour, it had gone red and swelled up, leaving me unable to move my two fingers. The cut was tiny, you could barely make it out. Luckily, the doctors were local, so off I went and got an appointment. The nurse came out and found it amusing, to be fair, because she'd never seen a mango-related injury before. She went and got a doctor for a second opinion. The doctor came out and confirmed I did indeed have a mango-related infection and prescribed a course of antibiotics. He had a smirk on too, by the way. I'm off dried mangoes now, but I still do love it as a pickle. Now, there's plenty to unpack there with Keith, because here we've heard about this 10-foot spider of Madagascar or wherever it was, I can't think back that far, that was covered in sand and bloody fangs, and that did no harm at all. And yet Keith, honest toiling tradesman, there in his marketplace, unpacks a mango, ends up at death's door. This is the unknown world in which we toil, perhaps. Give us something quick and we'll wind up on the good people.
This is from Sean about good and bad dreams. I've had an odd dream once and this seems the place for it. I'd committed a crime of some sort. I don't know what it was, but I had been nicked and sentenced. My punishment was I had to be Rod Hull for 5 years. Previous bloke, who had been Rod Hull, had been freed. They brushed his hair and sent him back to civvies. However, they took me in a room, messed up my hair, gave me a safari suit and a false arm with emu, and I was him. I spent 5 years attacking chat show hosts with a ratty old bird.
How about that? I'm not going to attempt to follow that. That is as good as vivid an alcohol-induced fever dream gets. Well, this kind of round up on Tuesdays, I think, well, not entirely regular, but it shows you the kind of wealth of correspondence we've been overlooking in our arrogance, in our pomp. Spending 12 minutes of all the show talking about Ho Chi Minh pastry chef. But in the meantime, if you want to play the theme tune there.
1, 2, 3, 4. Treehouse. Climb up, go in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away.
In the treehouse.
The fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied. We laugh the day away
in the treehouse.
Take it away, Danny!
Thanks, Phil. That's Napoleon, Louise, Pepper, Ho Chi Minh on the other side of London. Always great co-hosting the show. Phil Wilding has been producing it on behalf of Something Else, who give us the platform. But as you can literally see this week, it is chiefly yourselves. We'll see you Saturday, everyone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.